If you think we're on the run, we are the boys.
And welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army Podcast.
We are the boys who will make you think again, 'cause who...
This is podcast number 26 and will be slightly different to that advertised on podcast 25. We won't be discussing all these safely gathered in, I'm afraid, this time round. That's going to be saved until hopefully the next podcast.
On the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun. So who...
The good news is that we've received a lot of emails about that episode, so we'll be able to incorporate that in our discussion. So you still have a couple more weeks to send us your comments, if you haven't already, about All Is Safely Gathered In. Instead, we bring you a detailed discussion about the Season 9 episode Miser's Hoard, and I'll be joined once again by my good friend James. James joined us probably about 15 podcasts ago to discuss Asleep in the Deep, and he makes a welcome return.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
Now, Dad's Army is featured heavily in the news. It's been on television, it's been in the newspapers over the last couple of weeks, mainly concerning events surrounding the 40th anniversary. You've already heard our coverage, presumably, of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society event held up at the Imperial War Museum. We brought you some coverage of that on the last podcast, and it's well worth taking a listen to some of the actors speak to the audience there. It was an exceptionally entertaining day. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to cover these items in great detail on this podcast, mainly because I'm so busy. We're getting a new bathroom fitted, so I've actually got a guy from B&Q up there right at this moment in time, so every now and again you may hear potentially some really loud banging or drilling, so I don't really have a very quiet opportunity to record. In fact, he's probably wondering who I'm speaking to right now. I will just mention two things though. There's the 40th anniversary celebration that BBC One have organised, and that's a recording with Jonathan Ross. That's already taken place. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend myself, even though I did have tickets, but one of our blog readers, Esther Layden, has sent in some comments on her experience of the evening, and you can read that over at www.dadsarmypodcast.blogspot.com. And in the next podcast, I'll read out some of Esther's comments, and hopefully we'll have some other thoughts from other people who attended by then as well. The other thing to mention is by now the Thetford weekend would have happened. That was an entire weekend devoted to celebrating Dad's Army being filmed in Thetford and the association that the programme has with that town in Norfolk. We're also not going to be able to bring you feedback. Now, we've received loads of feedback over the last 3 weeks, and I would like to say thank you so much to those of you who have spent the time sending messages in. And we will go through each and every one of those emails, and if you haven't received a response back from me personally yet, then it's only a matter of time. My last excuse, if you like, is that this is the first podcast I'm recording on a new computer that I've purchased, and it's slightly different to my last one. I'm desperately trying to get to grips with Vista, and it's not as easy as everyone seems to think it is, and at this moment in time I'm crying out for my old computer back, but hopefully the sound quality hasn't changed and you shouldn't be able to notice too much of a difference. So what we have got for you, as I mentioned earlier, is a discussion about A Miser's Hoard. That's coming up very shortly. And also, we've received an MP3 from one of the podcast friends, Claire, concerning Mum's Army, so I'll be playing those both for you very soon. Well, now in fact.
James Fraser. Dear Mrs. Pickering, I hope you found the funeral arrangements for your late husband entirely satisfactory. May I say how sorry I was that the hearse ran out of petrol just outside the I'm sure your dear departed husband would have been proud of the way you helped to push him to his final rest. And what a fine, strong woman your mother is. I hope you managed to get the mud off her skirt. Include my final account. Let me see. One solid oak coffin, £4.15 and threepence. One set of brass handles, 13 and 6 pence. Transport there, £3.14 and tuppence. That's a mixing allowance of £2. No, of 32 shillings, aye, for the last 120 yards. Total, £9.211. Profit, £3.683, three farthings. Total profit for the week, £18.17. Less 6 and a penny housekeeping. Not bad. Not bad at all.
I'd like to welcome James back to the podcast, this time to discuss the season 9 episode, The Miser's Hoards. Welcome back to the podcast, James.
Good to be here, thank you very much.
Well, we've just finished watching this episode, and you haven't seen this before, had you? This is first viewing for you.
Not that I recall, no. Mm. It all seemed very new and fresh to me.
Well, this is one of the episodes that centres very much around an established character, so you could call this Fraser's episode, really.
Yeah.
So, did you find that particularly different to the episodes that you've seen? Which
not really, because all the way through, Fraser's had his moments to shine in episodes. And this one certainly started out as being the Fraser show, but the second half in particular, it was quite a sort of a mix of Fraser on the one hand, but the other regulars on the other.
Hmm. I thought at one point Jones almost stole the show. At least
the slapstick.
Yeah.
The respirator slapstick.
Yeah. For nearly 5 or 6 minutes, we had a complete diversion to Jones.
Was it that long?
Oh, it was a long time.
It felt that long.
It was in the middle of the episode, and it felt very much like padding to me, but I wasn't very keen on that scene at all. Anyway, going back right to the very beginning, we open with a monologue, really, from John Lurie.
Indeed.
Which I find incredibly watchable. He's compelling, almost, his acting, I felt, the first few minutes there.
Yes, you can tell he's an experienced actor with a great stage presence behind him. Yes, he's clearly very old school and enjoying his moment to shine. And he's very mesmeric.
I think he does shine when he gets his stories. And strangely, particularly as this episode focused on Fraser's character, you didn't get what people, general fans, call Fraser stories, which is where he goes off on usually a tangent and describes a story.
Actually allow for that.
There was, but in the absence of the normal staple Fraser elements, I think John Lurie delivered a really good episode. And I really enjoyed the moment, just as he was talking about his money, and he's coming to the climax of figuring out how rich he is, and then Fulton Mackay interrupts him and sends him into terrible panic.
Well, you've hit upon something there, actually, because I throughout the episode you got the impression that Fraser's stability has been called into doubt, frankly. He doesn't seem to be acting very rationally at all, not just in the sense that he's not handing in the money to the bank, which is the sensible option, one could say, but all the way through, his behaviour seems extreme. Mm. The monologue at the start, I mean, who is he talking to? Who is he addressing? The excessive time he leaves Fulton Mackay outside the door, which wasn't particularly necessary. He could conceal the money over the door, perhaps. The way he went about burying the money as well, cackling all the while. Why would you cackle? Why would you bring attention to yourself?
Although that, I think, was a deliberate setup. He knew he was being watched. But the point...
Yes.
I do understand the point you're making, and I think it's the
premise. Anyway, he ran out to the end as well.
Yes, very true. Yes, but his instability, although it hadn't really been demonstrated incredibly overtly, was used as a reason for Mannering to get involved, because the doctor told Mannering, "I'm only telling you because I'm concerned, and he's a member of your platoon." Mm. And although I still think the doctor's motives were probably supposed to be genuine and quite altruistic, I think Mannering's reaction was anything but, and he had a couple of slips where he's thinking about the coffers of his bank being swirled by Fraser's sovereigns, and I think it showed Mannering in quite a bad light. Because
that was his only contribution to the show, basically. He just tracking down the sovereigns.
Yeah, he wanted Fraser's sovereign. There was one brief moment where the audience perhaps was led into thinking Mannering did care about Fraser, and that was after Fraser had put the phone down on him. Mm. And he said, "Look, Fraser, I don't want your gold." But of course he didn't realise at that point Fraser wasn't there. So. The next scene was in Mannering's office. Mm-hmm. and it doesn't show much at all for any kind of confidentiality. I know it's raised by the doctor that he's not breaching any confidentiality because Fraser's not his patient. But even so, I would have still thought that was probably quite unprofessional for a doctor to go and discuss somebody else's business on the basis of his health.
Well, in ordinary circumstances, you'd say that, but possibly because it was wartime, slightly different rules apply, and your platoon commander does have a certain responsibility for your well-being.
Mm.
But I agree, ordinarily you wouldn't want your doctor doing that.
No. Well, maybe things have changed a little bit since wartime, perhaps. Moving into the middle part of the episode, this is the parade, this scene was split into two, the first of which we've touched on already a little, which is Jones's lecture, which I found basically unfunny. There was one element there that actually links back to an episode in series two, I think it is, which is A Strike for Fraser, where Jones is corrected by Godfrey, and he says, "You don't call it your gas mask, you call it your service respirator." And this is series 9, so it's the last series of Dad's Army, and that joke was first made all the way back in one of the black and white episodes in series 2.
Perhaps they felt they'd get away with it after a gap of 8 years.
I think it was probably deliberate. My feeling was that it was a deliberate link, and it was consistent that Mannering had always wanted them to call it a service respirator, but despite them being together for so many episodes and for so long, they still called it a gas mask. So.
You're probably right. Motifs, a lot of sitcom writers do like their motifs. I know on the Father Ted commentary, the writer's comment on, well, the writer who's on the commentary actually does make reference to the fact that they like certain motifs throughout the series. Certain constants there.
Yeah.
So Dad's Army presumably is no different.
No, it's good. I've mentioned in the past there's quite minimal continuity throughout the whole of Dad's Army, and yet this was quite clear, I think. Mm. The second part of that scene, where Mannering moves on to the lecture on gold and money and savings and so on, I thought was quite funny for two reasons. Pike and Godfrey, really, because they told everybody where they keep their money. Well, Pike said his mother keeps quite a considerable sum about her person, so that's nice and secure now, and Godfrey keeps his money in a teapot with the spout broken. So he announced that to a room full of 30, 40 people.
Yes, absolutely. Very unguarded. And part of the comedy.
Indeed. Quite one, if you like, with internet banking. You know, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
So. Well, they blurt out their passwords.
Quite possibly. That scene finishes off, really, with Mannering Wilson withdrawing into the office, Mannering being very self-congratulatory, saying how wonderful he was, and the scene finishing with Fraser by putting his head through the door, saying, "If you think you're going to get your hands on my gold..." And I thought that was just perfect. I thought that was done really, really well. So. Moving on to the next scene, we've got a little scene here without any of the regulars, which consisted of Hodges, the Verger, and the Vicar, and a few other people in the queue for Hodges' shop.
Oh, well, hello, Vicar. We don't often see you in here.
We don't often see onions here.
You can have half a pound, but only on condition you promise to cut your sermons to 8 minutes. Who's getting in and out the pulpit?
Here.
Have you heard the scandal about Fraser, the undertaker?
Is there a woman involved?
Be quiet, Mr. King. You shouldn't listen to gossip. What's he done?
They say he's ordering thousands of gold coins in his shop. You can't move for them.
Well, in that case, I shall ask him for a contribution for the church fabric fund.
You'll be lucky he's owed me 13 and sixes last January. I've asked him for it till I'm blue in the face. I'll tell you what, if I don't get it, I'll county court him.
What I say is parsimony is a sin if it's carried to excess. Don't you agree, Vicar?
I've never really given it very much thought, Mr.
I think it shows how strong the characters of the Vicar, the Verger and Hodges were.
Well, how strongly they've been developed from the early days.
Yes, absolutely.
Because in the early days he was visited as just being the home guard platoon, and the other characters worked their way into it as time went on.
Indeed, and yet they hold this scene quite well, particularly the Vicar, who is quite hungry for some gossip.
Yes.
And I think it's good, because I like seeing Hodges interact with characters other than those in the platoon, because he doesn't yell at them all the time. And,
no, exactly. He's quite civil.
Yeah.
He shows on the side of him, which is nice.
And Bill Pertwee's way of portraying Hodges when he's not a lunatic or shouting or incredibly frustrated, I think he's excellent. And I like those little scenes, and they do crop up every now and again. Mm. And it happens sometimes when Hodges is discussing things with his fellow wardens. Mm. Again, they're on his side, if you like. It's good to see a calmer Warden Hodges. What did you think of John the Mesurer as a drunk?
Quite convincing, but I suspect he was sober because there's this old, as I gather, this old showbiz rule that you shouldn't be actually drunk if you're trying to play drunk. I suspect he was sober as a judge.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure of it. Mm-hmm. I thought he was brilliant, though.
Very convincing.
Very convincing. He's got a, even when he's sober, he's got a very casual way of delivering things. Mm. His words roll into each other, and of course, playing a drunk, you only have to push that a little bit further, and you've got a very convincing.
All you have to do is basically start slurring your words on top of that, and the slight stagger, and he's got it just right. He played the classic drunk trying to act sober because everyone else is sober around him.
Indeed.
And not really managing it.
I don't understand this at all. Huh? Fraser's never ever Mr. Parade. I do hope he's all right. Have you had any luck?
Well, he wasn't at the Horse and Hounds, and I haven't seen him at the Fox since Christmas. I know that because we made inquiries.
Yeah, we also made inquiries at the Red Lion, the Marquis of Granby, the Fox and Pheasant, and the Black Horse. And what Mum's going to say when she sees you like this, I do not know.
It's only one of two episodes that I can think of where Wilson has been drunk. And there's another one early on in the run called Getting the Bird, where he...
Although he sobers up well for the graveyard, doesn't he?
He does. That was quite quickly. Was he there? I can't remember.
He was there. He seemed sober.
Ah, well, okay. Maybe a slight lack of...
A couple of hours in between, but still, you'd think he'd be a little bit less alert. Perhaps he'd be probably asleep by then. Quite possibly.
One other link, this is a very general link, we touched briefly on continuity. Going back a scene, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but it doesn't matter that much. But the scene back in Hodge's shop, they were discussing onions.
Yeah.
And there's an episode early on in Dad's Army called We Know Our Onions, right, which also starred Fulton Mackay.
Oh, right.
It's a completely different character.
But the scriptwriters thought, onions are, right, we could use Fulton Mackay for this character, perhaps.
Now, that I wonder, it's certainly a possibility, but I wonder if that was a coincidence. Mm. I said Mackay, it's the second time he's cropped up that I can remember. He may have played other roles.
Well, I was going to touch on Fulton Mackay, actually, because I thought the use of him was quite interesting and quite bold, given that at the time the episode was broadcast, late 77, he'd be very familiar from his role in Porridge,
which
the time was rivaling Dad's Army for its popularity. Actually, at that time, the last series was broadcast in 77. And the way he's used, which is very natural and untrumpeted, is indication that they knew the other cast was strong as well, that Fulton Mackay, this star, wouldn't overshadow them. Mm. He wasn't used as a gag appearance, and he was just introduced quite naturally. And I thought that indicated that the scriptwriters were very confident in their characters they'd created, that he wouldn't overshadow them, and he doesn't.
No, I knew Mackay was in Porridge. He played a character called Mackay, I believe. Which is obviously a very different character to the Doctor that he portrayed.
Yes, that's right.
He was also in Doctor Who. He was in a couple of Jon Pertwee episodes. So, but my point is, James is yawning here because he doesn't like Doctor Who as much as I do. But it's interesting, and it actually backs up your argument. People would have been very familiar with a face on their television, and they had no concerns in casting such a well-established such a
also they knew he was a good comedy actor. So they just thought they'd go for the talent regardless.
For a fairly straight role. Interesting. Okay, just moving on towards the last part of this episode then. We have we have a telephone conversation with the Verger in his dressing gown and a flat cap on.
Yes.
Which is, I thought, was quite a strange night attire. They obviously decided...
I do wear nightcaps, but still, that's literally a nightcap.
I think perhaps maybe by that point, everyone's image of the Verger was in a flat cap, so it didn't actually matter that he was supposed to be in bed.
I don't remember wearing one, in the episode of not wearing one.
I'm sure there is, but I can't think of the name of any episode.
Because I don't know what his hair looks like, in fact. So I
the finale of this episode, and it feels very much like it was leading up to a finale, was Fraser in the churchyard setting the rest of the platoon and the vicar up a little bit.
Yes.
And
burying the box in a very old fashioned, not burying it properly, and then putting a very uncommitted piece of turf down on top of it. Then stepped on and showed it was a bit of a prop.
I think it was quite easy to see that entire scene with Studio Bound.
Yes, yeah.
But I don't think it loses much. The thing that stands out and always has done when I've seen this episode is Pike's description of Fraser's laugh, where he's saying he digs, he cackles, and then he digs again. And then he imitates John Lurie's cackle, which doesn't actually... It's nothing like Fraser's laugh, but I always find that quite funny. And also towards the end of the episode, where Mannerin thinks he's got the better of Fraser. And I actually think it shows Mannerin and the vicar in the last scene as exceptionally predatory. Because Mannerin basically says, I'm taking your money into the bank. And the vicar wanted something towards the fabric fund of his church.
Fraser didn't have much choice given it's still his money right till the very end.
No, he wasn't given any choice at all. No. So, which I thought was, it showed those two characters in a very bad light.
Rather patronising, I thought.
Very much so.
The assumption was that Fraser couldn't look after his money. Okay, as we say, he's demonstrated some signs of instability in the episode, but it was deemed to be the case that he just couldn't look after his money. They took it away from him.
Okay, so that's the end of the second episode you've reviewed with us, James. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
As always, it was good fun as the first.
Wonderful. The last question I have for you is, what would you score this episode out of 5?
5. I'd give it a 2, simply because I didn't laugh very much at it. I have to say, I'm with Andrew on that one.
I give this 3. I'll give it just one more than you, purely because I think John Laurie's acting was fantastic. I didn't like Jones very much at all, which is, to be fair, I don't like Jones very much in any of the episodes. There's a couple where I do. And I also really enjoyed Wilson's portrayal as a drunk. I think between John LeMessurier and John Laurie, I think this episode deserves slightly more than 50%. So 3 out of 5.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast.
Well, who'd have thought it? Captain Mannering has a Christian name, and it's George. This was just one of the many wonderful surprises I've found in the episode entitled Mum's Army, which James lent to me in order to make this monologue. And I promise, tempting though it is, I will not, for that reason, turn this into a feminist monologue. But there were loads of really good things in this episode that perhaps were made easier because of the differing structure and the fact that female characters were there. Now, on the first level, this led to some really funny verbal innuendos. And these days they might not be written in or they might be considered politically incorrect, but heck, I found them funny. For example, when the officers are attempting to introduce their female favourites, comments such as, "She's one of my most regular customers and I'm sure she'll give complete satisfaction," said by Jones in the right way, really very funny. And you'd have to be just too straight-faced not to laugh, and I can't do that because I really did find it very amusing. And even though I'm not, as if you've heard me in previous podcasts, one of the people who's necessarily as into visual innuendos as others, or visual comedy in general, really did enjoy the visual comedy that ensued as well. For example, Jones, again, when he's responding to the comment, "I've put my name on the bottom," and his eyes are inexorably drawn rather lasciviously to the bottom of the lady in question. But also, more subtly, there were some lovely visual points. When the ladies were lined up attempting to do their drill, not only was it very funny visually that they are just differently balanced, differently proportioned, and therefore there's a joke there, it tied in beautifully with the fact that each of the main characters was vying for their own woman, and therefore supporting them, whatever mistakes they made in the drill. That's very good, Mrs. Grey, from Captain Mannering, for example. Even more subtle still, and this brings me on to the next point, we have Captain Mannering taking his glasses off. Now, very often if somebody does that in any kind of dramatic piece, It can just turn into slapstick where they're walking into doors. And there was some of that, but there was so much more. In the hands of these writers in this episode, it had much more of the resonance that we normally see the other way round, of the kind of scene when, for example, a man takes off a librarian's glasses and it all becomes rather romantic, if not sexy. And the fact that he is inspired to take them off makes this episode so much deeper than the others that I've seen. On one level, he can't see at all without them, but on the other, he's seeing a great deal more of life than he normally would in his role as the Captain Mannering that we know. Oh, so much to say and so little time in which to say it, but one thing I really do want to stress as well is how much I really appreciated the writing behind this episode, in the way in which the men's reaction to the women was scripted. And I'm not talking specifically about Captain Mannering's relationship, but all of them. I actually had the experience of being one of the first women in an all-male establishment at university, and I can vouch for the fact that you get exactly the kind of scenes that were here. For example, when they said, as men, we like to... Oh, and women, we like to do X, Y, and Z. That's exactly what happens, and it's not because there's anything wrong, but just because people aren't used to women being around. And there is suddenly an increase in the amount that people chat to each other, and people do start to think about whether their procedures are actually exactly the right ones, and it can put the cat among the pigeons. So this was a really, really insightful piece of writing. Couldn't leave this, though, without pointing out a really profound aspect of this episode, and that is the very end, where Captain Mannering has shown what a changed man he is likely to become by saying, damn the bank. We then know that he really is very serious about Mrs. Gray. And yet, in a sort of homage to Brief Encounter, he's left with tremendous pathos, just staring at the train as it goes out of the station. What an episode. I could go on and on about this, but I'm only allowed a certain amount of time. 5 out of 5. Well done, George Mannering, and everybody behind you. I was so impressed. Thanks a lot. See you again.
That's about it for Podcast 26. James will be back in Podcast 27 as soon as his bathroom has been installed. At the moment, he appears to be reenacting a scene from Asleep in the Deep. Let's hope his bathroom has a convenient manhole. Remember to keep an eye out for Jonathan Ross Salutes Dad's Army on the 3rd of August, and let us know what you think of it after it's been screened. Our email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com.